This is FMR.
You're listening to Fine Music Radio, and this is Rodney Trudgeon welcoming you to this week's edition of People of Note. The exciting thing on the cultural scene this week is the opening of Donizetti's opera Lucia di Lammermoor on Friday the 14th here in the Artscape Opera House. It promises to be quite a production, and we've got the conductor of the opera here in the studio, Kamal Khan, the Indian-American conductor and pianist, who incidentally combines an active performing career with a passionate commitment to the globalization of operatic training. And in fact, Kamal was here in Cape Town as director of the opera school at the UCT University for some 8 years and has traveled all over the place. And Kamal, welcome, first of all.
Thank you, Rodney. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. And by the way, I think it would be easier for me to leave out the places you haven't been to. The list of the opera houses you've been to is remarkable, as well as some of the singers you've worked with. But I thought we'd start, before we talk about you and what you're up to, about talking about Lucia, because I read somewhere that Donizetti was on a bit of a roll because Rossini had given up composing and lived for many, many more years. And Bellini had just died. So Donizetti was the sort of kingpin, wasn't he, of Italian opera?
Yes, but it was an overnight success that lasted many years in the making, like many people who have an allegedly overnight success. He was a good, I forget what number of opera Anna Bolena was, but that was really the first piece that he walked out from under the shadow of Rossini. And even in Anna Bolena, you find certain tendencies like what they call a musico role, which means a mezzo in pants, but it's different than Mozart's pants role. You find the role of Smeton, which is a musico role. And this tradition of putting men in pants in the Italian theater was surprisingly durable. We see it in Bellini Capuletti di Montecchi, which they did out there. And so it took a while for Rossini to shed these for Donizetti to shed these conventions and really come into his own with, I wouldn't so much call it bel canto because I'm not sure what that means, but melodramma romantico. All singing should be beautiful. That's what bel canto means. But there's something special about the romantic melodrama, the literary sources involved, and I think a certain operatic grandeur in the more modern sense. The more Donizetti you know, especially the less familiar scores, the more you realize that Verdi was a brilliant synthesist and creative force, but he didn't smote the ground and out came Otello. It was a bit more complex than that. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of wonderful work of Donizetti's which paved the way for these other pieces.
I think Lucia was premiered in 1835, thereabouts. Is it? I don't know all the Donizetti operas. I seem to know the comedies better. Is Lucia possibly his most dramatic opera, his most tragic opera?
I would say it's his most consistently successful dramatic opera. It has the strongest general level of musical inspiration. There is one large cut that even in the manuscript he writes on that page, si può tagliare, you can cut this. I've taken him at his word.
Okay.
But in general, the level of inspiration is extremely high. There's some inconsistencies in some of his most interesting scores because people went to the opera for different reasons, for different purposes. The attention they paid to the performance was different. In order to create a compelling theatrical through line, Lucia is the piece, I don't want to say the piece that lends itself best to this because we did Maria Stuarda here 8 years ago and many people still to this day say it was one of their most moving experiences in the opera house, but we had some very special singers involved in that.
And that makes quite a difference, doesn't it?
For Donizetti, it's kind of everything. And of course, we have an exceedingly gifted crowd of all South African singers, all making role debuts in the piece. Lucanio Moyake is stepping on up because he did the small tenor role in Vienna a few years back. I think the video circulates, and now he's moving into Edgardo. And Brittany Smith's fantastic Lucia, really making a
Yeah, we
great
saw her in Traviata, and then within weeks saw her in The Sound of Music. So she's incredibly versatile as well, but she's got to negotiate this world-famous mad scene that launched Joan Sutherland, and you think of Joan Sutherland and Maria Callas in that mad scene.
True, but I hasten to point out that both of them were seen as anomalies in the part. They both had darker, bigger sounds than what anyone really expected at that point in time. And, you know, the famous cadenza of Lucia is a great example. That famous cadenza of Lucia is not by Donizetti and is very much a result of adhered, accumulated performance traditions, which now the public expects and has every right to. Once the composer finishes writing the score, it belongs to everybody. It belongs to everyone who listens and performs.
Sure.
And I don't know what Donizetti would say if he heard this late 1800s cadenza with flute coming in the middle of his 1835 score.
He wrote it for glass harmonica, I was surprised to read.
Well, he wrote the bulk of the aria itself, that mad scene, has a glass harmonica solo in it, which he then crossed out in his score. The premiere was with flute.
Oh, really? So he himself crossed out the glass
absolutely.
Harmonica.
Absolutely. And I think there were problems. You know, there's two different technologies with the glass harmonica. There's all the glasses, little empty wine goblets, sit in varying degrees of empty, sit in one place, and a musician runs around running his fingers all over them. Or there is put the goblets on a turning thing, and the musician stands still and puts his hands on different goblets for different pitches. And that has all kinds of things to do with how fast a passage can go, how penetrating the sound is. One of the problems with glass harmonica in a large theater is it has to be amplified.
Oh, yes, of course. But it's interesting what you said about the dark voices of Sutherland and Callas. And Brittany does have a lightish voice, and yet it needs to be dramatic, doesn't it, to carry the mad scene?
She has an extremely warm voice, and this is a great help in the cantilenas, in the opening section of Regnave and the beginning of the mad scene, in the duet with Arturo, the duet with Edgardo. She's got extremely beautiful line, really great legato, silky, very sophisticated singing. So I find it quite beautiful. I mean, the Lucia, of all the ones, I played many different Lucia's rehearsals the years I was working at the Met, and then I've conducted a bunch of Lucia's over the years. And Marielle de Villa was probably the third one I played rehearsals for at the Met and the first Italian I played it for. And the voice weight was not heavy at all. It's penetrating, but it's not a bath in sound like young Sutherland or I would say now, and I am not just plugging her because she's my student, but because I love her, like Nadine Sierra is, which is a real warm, full bath in sound. And it's not the kind of thing that I think Scotto was. De Villa is a much narrower instrument. But I find a lot of warmth in Brittany's that maybe isn't even present in those traditional light coloraturas. There's light in terms of color and there's light in terms of weight. And the two are two very different things.
Sure, absolutely. Gosh, and the penetration part as well. But now let's listen to an excerpt from Lucia's, your first piece of music. What have you chosen?
Well, I chose Joan Sutherland's Lucia because I did see her when she came back to the Met in 1982. I saw her live my first year of college. And this is with Nello Santi conducting. And Nello Santi is really... He and Eduardo Müller are the two conductors that really taught me how Lucia goes, playing rehearsals for them. And Nello's a very special part of my life. I wake up every morning at home in New York and drink espresso out of cups that belonged to him that I got when he passed.
It's a nice
and
thing.
It's his wit and his joie de vivre penetrate even across the years, even across recordings. So I was eager to choose him and Sutherland together because of what they both meant to me.
Thank you.
There's an excerpt from Lucia di Lammermoor, the opera which opens here in Cape Town this coming Friday on the 14th. Cape Town Opera's production with Kamal Khan conducting. Kamal is my guest. And what was that we heard, Joan Sutherland?
It was Regnava nel Silenzio, an early recording of Sutherland's with Nello Santi conducting.
When you saw Sutherland on stage singing this part, did she impress you more than you'd heard on record?
Well, by the time I saw her on this, I pretty much knew what to expect. I had seen her before. When I was 9 years old, I saw her in Tales of Hoffmann at the Met, or 11 years old. And that was on a bus trip where you go up for the day, see a matinee, and come back down. And that impressed me like nothing I've ever heard, because the sheer size of the voice was astounding. By 1982, she was a few years older, and perhaps I was a little more jaded. I was officially a music student, but it was pretty phenomenal. Again, the sound came to you in the back row as if she were right next to you, mm-hmm. with no apparent, with no force, with no effort, but just all embracing.
And am I right in saying that Sutherland made her big breakthrough with the Mad Scene from Lucia at Covent Garden? That was a huge breakthrough, wasn't it?
That was her big breakthrough, and it was the first new production they had staged for her, and it was Franco Zeffirelli. And so it really unlocked her magnetism as a performer, because she was very different from the Callas mold, but she held the attention. Mm. She could literally, physically do anything while she was singing. She could run upstairs singing all of those runs. And she had simplified the staging a bit by 1982, because Zeffirelli set it on her in 59. But she was smart. She kept everything that worked for her.
Someone told me a funny story that no one could fall down as well as Joan Sutherland. She apparently was quite a good actress.
She was very good at the falling. She got trained a lot to do that, I think. John Copley. I think a lot of people at Royal Opera House put in many hours teaching her how to fall. It was also the days when a theater really stood behind a singer and developed a long-term relationship with them, so it was understood. You know, Kitty Takanawa said the same thing about how she was coached in a room for a year for the Countess in Nozze di Figaro before she went on at ROH. And Evelyn Lear used to say, for the role of Octavian, it's three acts. You need 1 year per act of study.
My goodness.
And
me.
I like that. I believe that one puts the study in way early, so when the role offer comes up, you actually know if you can do it or not.
Mm-hmm. Kamal, when you get booked to do an opera like Lucia de Lammermoor here in Cape Town, do they send you the cast way ahead of the time? And are you able to say, no, I don't think he or she would work, or that will be great?
We had discussions, but I think all the ideas that Marc-Julien came up with were very, very good. There's no international element in the cast now, so I knew I would have the chance to work well with people, and the rehearsal period has been long enough that many conceptual matters we've been able to discuss. It isn't sort of like a shotgun marriage of 10 days and you do what you
yes,
do. It's
yes,
not
yes.
instant opera.
So sort of a luxury in a sense to have that period.
Yes, I think it's really how it should be. And when you have very famous international singers who've done a piece a million times, you kind of know what they're going to do, and that's good too. And then you mm-hmm. just sort of spend the rehearsal period lining up your ducks, more like in a symphonic rehearsal schedule, the concerto soloist isn't there for weeks and weeks and weeks. He's there that week. And you can do concerts that way, but I think staged opera comes out a bit cold when you do that.
Yeah.
Certainly a concept as sophisticated as Angelo's would not work in the instant opera format.
Yes, indeed, I'm sure. I'm looking forward to seeing what he does with
oh,
it, what
yes.
Angelo does with
no
it.
No spoilers.
Okay, no spoilers.
Come prepared to pay attention, to use all of your senses.
Now, the orchestra of Lucia as well is a reasonable size, isn't it? Donizetti really gets a lot of his drama into the orchestra.
Absolutely. And this is one area, I don't want to say it's different than Rossini, because Rossini certainly requires virtuosic orchestral playing at times. But to move, I don't know, I would say maybe Rossini kept the drama as an abstract, Donizetti moved the drama into the orchestra, and then Verdi put the drama in people's throats. And Puccini, perhaps, in their guts.
Well,
so that was the progress of opera. Good
Italy.
Or bad, I don't know.
But the other attraction of Lucia, I think, for people who are not, shall we say, opera fanatics, is the presence of a chorus and a fairly substantial role at that.
Yes, and not just any chorus. The presence of the Cape Town Opera Chorus is a very joyous occasion for me, always, and they sound absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, it does work so well with when you have a chorus. I love it. I love it. I wanted to ask you, you were really a young man. You were apparently one of the youngest assistant conductors at the Metropolitan. How did you get a post like that? Was it because you were brilliant?
Well, actually, what happened was I had played incoming auditions for the Young Artist Program for two singers the year before I graduated from college. And then the year I was graduating, I played for somebody else. And at that point, after I played her audition, she got into the program, but they also contacted me. So it was, I would say it was in a sense more informal, because when Maestro Levine was running the company, he sort of went, it wasn't, I don't know, we didn't have the internet in those days, so it wasn't like jobs had to be posted on the internet. It wasn't even like there were a precise number of positions as an assistant conductor. The first year I just went in as a rehearsal pianist so that they could get the measure of could I function in the theater. And that was actually when I played Lucia the first time. But then after the second year, the remaining 9 years, I was an assistant conductor. And then I finally realized that if I didn't go away after those 9 years, I would never be any kind of conductor except assistant
yeah.
that eventually you need to get out there and do it for yourself.
But it must have been amazing working with James Levine, because he did the most amazing things, not only with the singers, but with the orchestra. That Met Orchestra rose to be one of the great orchestras in America.
The level of polish in those days was really something. And across a very broad spectrum of the repertoire, and not just the nights that he was conducting, because people never knew when the boss would be in the house. He had
yes.
his secret exit out behind the office, and he would slip in just as the house lights were going out, Or if we were having a meeting, he would stop for a few minutes and turn on the speaker and listen what was going on the stage. So he knew how people were singing. He knew how people were playing. He knew in the rotation which musicians were playing which nights, you know.
And as I said earlier, when I mentioned all the opera houses you've worked in, and which I'm not going to mention because it would be easier to mention the ones you hadn't, listen to this group of singers that Kamal has worked with. People like Teresa Stratus, Placido Domingo, Renata Scotto, Cheryl Mills, Dame Kirita Kanawa, Mirella Freni, Pavarotti, Luciano Pavarotti, Marilyn Horne, Renee Fleming, Carla Bergonzi, Mariella Devia, Tatiana Troyanos, Nikolai Gerov. That is like the star-studded crown of singers, isn't it, that you've actually been lucky enough to work with?
It was the big crowd of those days. I just got to the Met a little bit too late through Leontine Price and Caballé, which makes me very sad that I missed them. But of the newer era, I've had so many, and so many coming that I work with regularly and engage with. So it's kind of nice. Carol Van Es, who I also played for some, said something very funny once when she started teaching. She said, "Every day I try to remember something really brilliant that Jimmy Levine or Ricardo Muti said to me, and as long as I can come up with it, my students think I'm a genius." And I love her because she is actually about singing. She is an absolute genius. And what she said is true. We try to stay a step ahead of our students. We try to stay with new advice for new orchestra members or new singers in a role. But we do also remember, you know, I remember one reading mistake that I made in Lucia the first time I played it for Maestro Müller, and one reading mistake that I made in Othello the first time I played it for Jimmy, one wrong accidental. And they're like burned into my mind because I did not like making mistakes. As we get older, we admit to mistakes perhaps more easily, because when you're in your early 20s, on a music staff surrounded by people double your age, the pressure to justify your presence is real.
You've got to perform.
Oh, yeah.
We now have Kamal Khan, playing the piano in a song by Tosti. Tell us a little about that. It was Juan Ponce.
Well, I chose something with Juan singing because if I have this conducting career at all, there's a group of maybe five people who it's thanks to. One of them would be Angelo Gobbato, and one would definitely be Juan Ponce. Because Juan really was very supportive about bringing me to Europe early in my career for all kinds of projects with him. This recording of Tosti songs we made around the time that we did a series of recitals in Spain, and we did a recital just after the Liceo burned down when they reopened it again in 2000. We did a recital there, which was wonderful because that was his home theater. This isn't the live one. This is the studio recording we made in Barcelona around the same time. And all roads lead to Lucia, because I remember playing a lot of Lucia rehearsals with Juan and a particular situation where a recording had been made of it and they decided they didn't like the baritone and they removed the baritone's track and Juan dubbed in the entire role.
Wow.
And we went through some fun organizing that, and he remains one of the greatest artists I've ever worked with, an extraordinary human being.
Sopra tintore, è la prima. sarai fra bambole, avrai sul petto rose e cilestrine, e le farfalle candide tolleggeranno intorno al nero crine. Il pietra avrai fra bambole, avrai sul petto rose e cilestrine, e le farfalle candide tolleggeranno intorno al nero crine.
Lovely warm baritone voice, Juan Ponce there, with Kamal Khan piano and a song by Tosti, Aprile. By Tosti. And the second choice of my guest this week on People of Note here on Fine Music Radio, the conductor and pianist Kamal Khan, who's in town to conduct Lucha de Lammermoor at the Artscape Opera House. It opens on Friday the 14th in a production by Angela Gobato. You've told us nothing you're going to give away, but we must come concentrating.
Yes.
We say conductor and pianist, but it looks as though the piano remains very, very important to you, not only for teaching and rehearsals, but for performance.
For actually playing. I mean, a performing musician needs to know that he or she can make music without the benefit of other people and in collaboration with other people. And when the pandemic hit and people decided that breathing all over each other while singing opera or while playing a musical instrument was not going to happen for an indeterminate period of time, I really set about renovating my pianistic technique, mostly to not go crazy from the frustration of not being able to make music. And I began to study again online, and this is a shout-out, Bob Durso, thank you. I have a wonderful teacher who I still check in with, and really developed a whole new physical relationship to the keyboard. It is the most important thing to me, because if I can't do it myself, what right do I have to ask other people to try?
That's fair enough. Yes, good psychology there. But then, so tell me, Kamal, how did it all start? You started with the piano. How did you end up being a conductor?
Well, it's very interesting because I always loved classical music.
Oh, from as early as you can remember.
Absolutely.
Well, you said you saw Maria Joan Sullivan when you were 11.
Yes, but by then I was an old hand. The first opera I ever saw, All Roads Lead to Lucia, the first opera I ever saw professional staged was Donizetti Lucia di Lammermoor with Beverly Sills. The New York City Opera came to the just recently opened Wolf Trap Park outside of Washington, 1971, if memory serves. And it was so great that I insisted on going backstage to congratulate her. And in front of her, I said, please tell my mother that we need to come back tomorrow night to see Faust. And we did. We got the cheapest seats there were, but we came back. And I got to see Norman Traeger play Faust and Gounod Faust. And I mean, really, I've just never stopped since then, whenever it's been possible.
Were your parents musicians?
My mother sang in an amateur choral society that would do one big symphonic work per year, sometimes an opera, sometimes an oratorio. My father, the Indian side, has no relationship to classical music, but it's interesting because he enjoyed Western classical music far more than Indian. We grew up with no connection musically to that culture. As an adult now, I start to listen and explore a little bit, and I'm going to be in Mumbai in about 3 months to conduct Operalia, which we had here last year.
That's right, we did.
And I'm staying an extra week to meet relatives that I've never met and to hopefully connect to things like Indian classical music and this broader culture that I think all of us who are from a diaspora, we've always got a lot of blanks that need to be filled in. Mm-hmm. And I get educated in that somewhat when I'm in South Africa, especially. I go to the UK a lot to teach because I teach for the Jetta Parker program at ROH. And when I'm in the UK, I see so many people whose stories are similar to mine. One of their parents left at the time of partition and basically didn't go back. Mm-hmm. And in hearing their stories and hearing their parents' and grandparents' stories, I start to understand a little bit more about my father and his life.
And what different music it is as well, Indian classical music. I mean, you've got to get your head and ear around that.
Indeed. But that's what I'm looking forward to the most, something new.
In Mumbai. And Kamal, when you were in Cape Town at UCT, did you enjoy it? I know that's a very open question. Because here also, as you know, because of our political background, there have been people that have been previously disadvantaged that have really made it.
Well, I enjoyed it very much. I hope that I was of service. I see a lot of my former students who are busy all over the world singing. I'm very happy for them. I get the occasional message, the occasional question. I get the chance to see them abroad. I'm working on cooking up. I'm going to be in Europe teaching the whole month of July, but I'm definitely hoping to go to Würzburg one evening to watch Sia Vulela Ntlale sing Falstaff, because he has the first Falstaff of his career Saturday night. I'm ill that I can't. Oh, excuse me. By the time this airs, it will be yesterday.
Okay.
I'm ill that I can't be there, but you can't be in two places at one time. But I mean, Sia and Falstaff is something that Angelo and I have looked forward to and have been working towards ever since we first met the lad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes there's certain roles that take 15 years to mature and gestate, and Falstaff is one of those.
Falstaff is a bass baritone, isn't
it? Yeah, more towards baritone, really.
More baritone.
It's got unduckable high Gs, and it really requires great baritone singing. There's two wonderful baritone roles in the piece. There's the role of Falstaff and the role of Ford.
It's interesting that, you know, you mentioned Verdi slightly earlier when we were talking about that line, Rossini, Bellini, Donizetti, Puccini, Verdi, Verdi, Puccini. I've always been a huge fan of Verdi, and listening to Verdi's early operas, you're very aware of the Rossini, Bellini, Donizetti influence, aren't you?
I would say the Rossini Donizetti influences for certain. Bellini is more the strand that Verdi didn't pick up.
Ah, okay.
There's a few moments. In Oberto, in fact, the aria of Kunitzia. Kunitzia is sort of, I see where one could say the Bellinian line. And even maybe in the aria of Fenena in Nabucco, which we've done here a few times, so people can remember, there may be a Bellini influence there. But I feel like Bellini goes sort of forward to Alfredo Catalani and the road not taken in Italian opera, the emphasis on the floweriness and the beauty of it and the vulnerability and a certain kind of emotionalism that maybe got replaced in the early 20th century with out-and-out sensationalism.
Well, that's a thought. But Verdi was certainly, I mean, there's someone who is a great orchestrator, wasn't he? When you think Rigoletto, which was so early, relatively, well, he's middle-ish period, that orchestra sounds like the Otello orchestra almost.
There's some very sophisticated things in the orchestration for Rigoletto. There's one offbeat Arco and Pitts alternating things when Gilda is dying, the second verse of Lassù in Cielo, which is thorny enough to conduct, but
okay.
It's a gorgeous effect. And I remember reading in George Bernard Shaw's criticisms, volumes of music criticism, which is so wonderful. He's talking about one performance of Rigoletto, and he said, if I didn't know better, I would swear one of our modern hands had retouched the orchestration. So vivid is it.
Oh, really?
Gosh.
Yeah. But he also, Verdi, we should be talking about Donizetti, but we have spoken, but just from your point of view as a conductor, you get an opera like Don Carlo, the dark, heavy opera. And then the
important writing for male voices, which wasn't – Lucia's a little ahead of the game that way.
With male voices.
But in general, the important writing for male voices wasn't so strong because there was that tradition of the musico parts. There were these pants roles that sort of found their genesis in the castrati from before that. It's never the wrong time to talk about Verdi.
Good, I'm glad.
One never knows
that.
if it might be reoccurring in a future visit here. So I say, by all means, let's talk Verdi.
And also, what a beautiful opera Aida is. I mean, everyone thinks of Aida as this grand opera because of the triumphal scene, but it's almost his most intimate, isn't it?
It certainly has its moment. The third act, the Nile scene, I think might be his longest stretch of so few principles, and that makes it very intimate. It's always in Verdi the difference, the conflict between your public duty and private desires, and it doesn't play out quite as grippingly anywhere else in the literature as Don Carlo and the third act of Aida.
We're going to have another music break now, Kamal, and you've got Beverly Sills singing here. Tell me what we're going to hear.
Well, I put Beverly on here because she was the first Lucia I saw, and she was always so encouraging. And it's with Julius Rudell conducting because he was my boss when I was at Palm Beach Opera, from whom I learned a huge amount. And they're doing Handel Giulio Cesare, which has nothing to do with anything except I rather love the way they perform it. It's very free and freewheeling. It's not particularly authentic style-wise. They make little cuts and things. But the virtuosity is from her singing is just dazzling. And Julius Maestro Rudell always had a sense of balance in his work that I think is miraculous.
There's one of the great sopranos, Beverly Sills, conducted by Julius Rudel there, and Giulio
Cesare.
There you are. Kamal did it for me.
These words like Cesare break the rule. They're called sdrucciola in Italian. They accent on the first syllable rather than the penultimate.
So are you,
Giulio Cesare.
Are you multilingual as well as being all this talented pianist and thing?
Multilingual in a few languages. Not really, not as many as your average person you would stop on the street in Switzerland, but or for that matter here in Cape Town.
Yes, that's true.
Most of my students at UCT were already trilingual, I remember. Mm-hmm. And it was a great help when they had to learn languages they'd never sung, like a Czech. We had a foreign expert come in and help them with their Czech when we did Vixen, and he said, I've never seen kids pick it up this quick.
Gosh, that is amazing.
Once you're multilingual, you're multilingual.
Kamal, since we're approaching the end of the program, and we've talked a lot about Lucia, which opens this week on Friday, here at the Artscape Opera House, there's so many things you're involved with all around the world, really. But one of the things I'm intrigued with is something called Opera for Peace. What is that, actually?
Well, this is a thing that I was one of the founding members of with Julia Lageyser and Jenna Wolf. And it's about getting access to training for people not from the Global North centers, setting up opportunities for them, and putting people together for our annual academies. We just had our third one this year, which was in both Rome and Paris, because we couldn't it was too much to cram into one city. And we've always had, every year there's been at least one South African singer involved. This year we had a South African singer and a young South African stage director, Kolane Marman, involved. And it's really a chance to bring people together and raise their artistic level, artistic awareness, get them networking, and get them thinking a little bit about their roles as citizen artists. Our South African singers we've had involved, Kayakazi Madlala this year. Last year was Lulama Taifisi. And Yolisa Gwenkane, it was the first year as well. So we've had one every year, and I don't anticipate any change in that in the future, because South Africa is exactly the set of singers that need the chance to get the international exposure. You know, many apprentice programs, no matter how much they like a singer, if you haven't studied in the Northern Hemisphere with people they know, they have no way of finding out what you're like to work with. Mm-hmm. Do you show up on time? Do you this? Do you that? And so the networking still favors people who have been studying up there.
Yeah,
and this is not the same as a prejudice or a wall. It's just something that those of us who are advocating for singers from South Africa, also from South America, this can be a problem. We have to work energetically to help make up the natural confirmation bias of, I'll just take this person who's been studying with my best friend here in London or here in Paris or here in Frankfurt.
Mm-hmm. It's an interesting title, Opera for Peace, in our troubled world at the moment. So that you meet once a year, basically. You have a festival once a year.
We do the academy once a year.
Yeah.
But we're also putting together some scenes, doing some work in Pesaro in the end of August. I'll be there for that. And throughout the year, there's concert opportunities. And our artist ambassadors, like Thomas Hampson and Sumi Joe, look for opportunities and projects that they're involved with for our singers.
Okay. Kamal, just on a lighter note, I always like to ask people who are so busy what you do when you relax. Do you listen to music a lot? Your favorite recordings of operas and stuff?
I listen to music, but it's usually along the lines of research.
Yes, okay.
It's either really because a project is coming up, because I want more background on somebody. I'm pretty studious about not listening to recordings of works that I'm studying at the piano. I'm always studying some solo repertoire for my own growth. And I would just as soon avoid, because I can read music.
I'm sure you can.
I would like to know what I'm up to. I heard so many great pianists when I was young. It's not as though I don't know what their background was. But I think it's interesting to sort of get in the wheelhouse and work on my own situation.
The wheelhouse, that's a good analogy. But now, talking about great pianists, what about great conductors? You've worked with people like James Levine and a host of others, Riccardo Muti, who...
Maestro Muti, I've not had the good fortune to work with, I'm afraid. I admire him greatly, but from afar.
Okay. But now, who has been your greatest influence? Because the 20th century had great conductors.
Once you're working with them, or once you've even met them, it can be hard to separate their music making from their personality. So if you go with an influence of someone that I didn't get to work with, that I only got to watch, I would have to say Carlos Kleiber has really been the person that, for me, I watched him conduct live good numbers of performances, Bohème, Traviata, Otello, and Rosenkavalier. And it was just wizardry and magic of the highest degree.
You know that there was a BBC magazine, music magazine, survey among something like 100 professional conductors who were asked to vote their top five conductors, and Kleiber was voted number one.
I'm
followed
not surprised.
At number two by Abbado, Claudio Abbado, interestingly.
I get that.
But now you've asked us to play some Carlos Kleiber, the overture, at least part of it, of Die Fledermaus, with his marvelous recording from Vienna.
I can't think of anything more celebratory that would encourage people to partake of this wonderful thing called classical music than a Carlos Kleiber Fledermaus.
There you are, you see, from the horse's mouth, so to speak. Kamal Khan has been my guest. He's a conductor, he's a pianist, he's been everywhere in the world, including South Africa, and is here to conduct our Lucia de Lammermoor with Brittany Smith starting on Friday in the Opera House. And I think there are only four or five performances.
I believe it's five.
Yeah.
So come see us early on, because the end of the run always sells out once people find out how good it is.
Yeah, and then start talking to their friends.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You be one of the people talking.
Absolutely. Okay, Kamal, thank you very much, and I'm sure we'll speak again sometime in the future.
Thank you, Rodney. A pleasure to be here.
This is FMR.